beautiful introduction. Welcome to the Guitar Channel. I am super happy to welcome you a new interview. I have on the other side of the Zoom connection, the one only, Ariel Podzen. Ariel, how are you doing today?
Hey man, I'm good. How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
I'm great. I mean, it's really a pleasure. I mean, I've been listening to your music over and over for the past few weeks to prepare for that interview, and I can't tell you how excited I am to be able to talk to you. So thank you very much for your time. You have to tell me, Ariel, what was your very first guitar?
Well, my very first guitar was a piece of shit acoustic. I don't even know the brand. I still have it, though. I have nice. I still got the Green Day sticker, the Rage Against the Machine sticker on it.
Right.
I couldn't tell you what it is. It's at my parents' place still. But my first, you know, real guitar was my first electric, which was an Ibanez RX series.
Okay, cool. And what was the initial inspiration to start to play the guitar? What was your smoke on the water moment, you know?
Well, both my parents are musicians, so I grew up traveling with them to their concerts. I would hang out at the studio when they were making records. Like, right when I was born, I was immediately kind of just submerged into all that stuff.
Nice.
So I just knew that. That's what I knew. That's what I saw, etc. So, I mean, I think subconsciously it became this thing that I didn't realize. It's just like, well, yeah, this is just what I'll do. But that first moment of like, oh, guitar. I started on piano, and then like when I was 8 or 7, maybe, everyone in school started playing guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the time of Green Day, Nirvana, Soundgarden, Chili Peppers, all those big rock bands that were just like had guitar as the focal point.
Yeah.
And the Beatles anthology came out too at that time. So that was another huge thing. So all those things combined just kind of made me, I just wanted to play those songs. And so I did. Mm. Dove in.
Nice. You are from Canada. Where are you from in Canada?
I'm right in the middle.
Okay.
Winnipeg, Manitoba.
Oh yeah. Winterpeg then.
You know it.
Yeah.
Have you been there? I'm assuming not, but have you been?
No, but okay. I've lived in Montreal in Canada for 11 years, and I've been to Vancouver, to a couple of places in Canada, but not right in the middle. So, but my wife used to work, and she did some training there, and she taught me the Winterpeg expression. So I guess it must be pretty cold at the moment where you are, right?
I'm actually in Montreal right now. Cool. But yes, it's cold here, but it's very cold in Winnipeg. Winnipeg, generally, by the end of December, January, February, we get like minus 20 to minus 30, like consistently. You know, mm-hmm. It's dry though. So like you bundle up, put on some layers, put on some long johns, good jacket, hat, gloves, scarf, and it's actually okay. Like, it's still really cold out, but you can dress for it. It's not like a cold. Sorry, it's not like a wet cold.
Yeah, yeah. That's what we have here in Paris, where the temperature rarely goes below, you know, -5. On when it is -5, it is really freezing. And I remember the time I spent in Montreal where it could be -15 outside, but the sun was out and it was not a big deal to deal with. Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you move to Montreal for music reason or no, nothing related to music?
Not related to music. I've actually moved around a lot the last few years, unrelated to music.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, without a pandemic, or with a pandemic too, I'm just, everything I do is so portable. I don't need to actually be anywhere specific, which is such a beautiful thing, and I'm so grateful for that. I can kind of just be wherever.
Nice, that's nice.
And I'll still be doing what I have to do.
Mm-hmm. What was your training and what are your main influences in your guitar playing and in your life as a musician overall?
Yeah, my training was fairly basic. I started with guitar lessons, had a couple different teachers, and I mean, I cut that off, or I cut it off, but you know, myself, my parents, we were just like, I don't think you need lessons anymore. At a point where, you know, it's not like I knew anything still. I had just grown out of lessons. I was just learning songs. I wasn't really, you know, expanding my knowledge or anything. When I was about 16, 17, that was actually the first time I heard Stevie Ray Vaughan, Scuttlebutton, and then obviously the Couldn't Stand the Weather record. And from that moment on, I had this shift where I realized I had, it's not that I had been wasting my time. It's just like I wasn't in that mindset of guitar players and improvisation and like taking music extremely seriously. And from that moment, it's like I put my head down and I never looked up after that. So I got so obsessed. So obviously I started Stevie Ray Vaughan. I started listening to all the guitar players that meant something to me. Robin Ford, Mike Landau, Hendrix. Those were just like the bluesy guys. And then it branched out into like, oh, like there's people in the pop world. Oh, there's people in the soul. There's people in the soul world. R&B, folk, country. And then I was like, wait a minute, jazz. Oh my God. And like I started getting into literally everything. Everything. And not just guitar players, piano players, sax players, singers, drummers. Everything. I just got really obsessed, and most of the stuff I learned was just on my own. I kind of had the bones down, like the foundation, and I just needed to simply understand where it all starts and how to navigate around it. And from there, you know, when you're so obsessed with something, it doesn't feel like work. Mm-hmm. You just are so driven and motivated by it, and that's the mindset I was in. I was just like, whoo, full steam ahead, didn't look up.
And do you remember the very first guitar part you were able to play? You know, the very first guitar piece you were able to play, and you played over and over, and it was pure joy, you know, to play. And can you play it?
Yeah, it was this. And there was another song. Oops. There's another song here in Canada. There's a show called Kids in the Hall. Mm-hmm. You ever heard of that show?
Nope.
Okay. So, anyways, they had a theme song that was really. It just had a really cool, like, surfy guitar part, and I learned that, and that was a very. You know, you feel this satisfaction, but you really feel like you've accomplished something at a young age when you learn a part like that and you play it over. And don't get me wrong, there was all the like. All that kind of stuff too, where it was like, oh my God, sounds like what I listened to on my cassette player, CD player, whatever.
And what about the role models you have both in your singing and in your guitar playing?
Oh man, so much. Like I wouldn't sound like I sound as a guitar player, and I wouldn't sound like how I sound as a singer if I didn't listen to everything. And it's never been just one person or one act. It's literally everything. Because the way I sing, for example, yeah, I have so many favorite singers, but do I sound like any of them? No. And like, could I even sound like them if I wanted? No, I just kind of have my own thing. But it's more so in the intention and the delivery and the dynamics that how people sing is, that's what really speaks to me. So like you listen to someone like Donny Hathaway or Stevie Wonder, there's so much control. And then you listen to someone on like the other end. So like even Paul McCartney, George or John, any of those guys, like completely different way of singing, but there's such beauty and simplicity and stuff like that. So my approach to singing was always just, it's not about fanciness. It's not about strutting anything, because I don't have anything to strut. It's just about serving the song. I know I say that a lot, but just singing what's needed and connecting with the listener to make sure that the lyrics are there and there's a nice sound and delivery from the tone of your voice itself.
Mm-hmm. And do you consider yourself being a singer who plays the guitar or a guitar player who sings? Or that's not really a big deal? And
it's not really a big deal. Yeah. I mean, both. I maybe would fall into the I'm a guitar player that sings, just because I've been playing guitar longer than I've been singing. But they're kind of just, I do this and I do this. I do both. It's not like this one's here just so I can sing to an audience rather than just play guitar. You know, I'm equally passionate about both.
Mm-hmm. So we are still in the middle of this crazy pandemic. What was the impact on your life as a musician? I mean, since it's been almost a year now.
Same as everybody. I mean, I had a full plan for 2020. I was going to release a record, which is coming out in a month. now, and I had a bunch of tour dates booked, and obviously that all got canceled or rescheduled. And there was some other stuff too, actually. I was going to do some other projects that I was really excited about that everything fell through. So, I mean, there's two ways you can go about it. You can sit around really being sad about it and just focusing on all these things you were supposed to do and you're not doing them. Or you could change your perception a bit and just say, whatever, everyone's in the same boat. You know what? I'm lucky that I can still make music, be creative, and stay working. And that's the path I chose to take. In fact, I'm really enjoying being in a routine, not traveling as much. I do miss traveling. Like, I just love seeing places and going places, but I really haven't missed the 5 a.m. wake-up calls for an early flight, 8-hour drives, all that kind of stuff. It's been a nice break from that, honestly. It was just a pivot, you know? Okay, now I was already making a lot of videos. I was already recording a lot of music. I was producing. I was writing with people. I was doing guitar sessions remotely for people. I was doing all the same stuff already. Mm. It was just like, okay, I guess I just have to do more of it now.
Mm. Okay, so you know? It was just more change of proportion between what you already did than rather taking on new jobs or new stuff to new knowledge to master and so on.
Yeah, and I'm grateful. Like, I don't take that for granted. I know a lot of people, you know, if I was just playing gigs, maybe as a sideman or a hired gun, just, you know, playing event band gigs on the weekend, playing showcases on the week, and those are all gone, I would have had a lot more of a harder time. But mm-hmm. I was already in a state where I was doing all this different stuff outside of just playing shows. So I was feeling very lucky about that. I will say, though, it took me about 6 months to feel creative. Like, I wasn't mm-hmm. inspired right out the gate. I think I can speak on behalf of a lot of my friends, too. You know, it's like, if you can't, it's not what we do. It's who we are as artists to, like, create art and create music and write music. We do it for ourselves. But at the same time, if we're writing music and have nowhere to put it out or no way to share it in the way that we're used to sharing it, what's the point of it? Mm-hmm. I think we were all a little confused. So it took me a while to get into that mindset of, like, I'm inspired again, and I'm just going to write. And I'm glad. You know, I can't force that kind of thing, so I'm glad it took me as long as it did, because I feel like when I started doing it, I was as passionate and inspired as I could be, rather than just forcing anything like that. So that was really important. So, but yeah, it is what it is this time. It's just strange.
Yeah. It's not like we have the choice anyway, so we have to adapt and see how we can make the best out of this situation. And let's move on to the album you're going to release. So it is called Headway. It's going to be released somewhere in March, right?
March 5th.
Okay, so this is all pre-pandemic music, or it was recorded during the pandemic? What was the process?
Yeah, it was all recorded pre-pandemic. It was recorded December 2019.
Okay.
So mm-hmm. I got to squeeze in a lot right before everything shut down. We did this record all of December, a little bit into January, and then I was in the States for some work, and there was NAMM and some other sessions and stuff. And then I was able to do a full tour in the UK, like a 3-week tour, and then I did a 2-week tour in Sweden, and then came back, played one more show in Canada, and then poof, everything was done. So I'm very grateful that I got a lot in. But right when the pandemic started, that's when we started mixing.
Okay.
So, like, mixing and, pardon me, that whole process was all done in the pandemic. And you know what? It was kind of a perfect time, because either way, the guy, Kean Reardon, I have another friend who's in O'Reardon, so I mix them up. Kean lives in LA, so we wouldn't have been in the same place anyways for mixing. It would have all been remote. So it was the same as it would have been. It was just we had more time. There was no real rush or deadline, just due to the fact that everything was in flux. We didn't know what was happening. So that was fine. That was all the same as it would have been with or without a pandemic.
What about your composition process? Is it possible for you to pick one of the songs of the album and maybe play us what was the initial idea of the song and how you worked on it until the finished product?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a... Is there a specific song maybe you're curious about?
Well, there's the very first song called Heart by Heart. I mean, is great because there is this great melody and great hook in the verse. So that would be one example, but really...
Yeah, sure. So that song started with this guitar idea. It was just... I was just messing around, actually. It was a lot of just... And that's like, I have voice memos on my phone of me just messing around with that. And then slowly but surely, it felt good to just be more consistent. And oftentimes for writing, it starts with a musical idea for me. And lyrics come after.
Like a melody, and then after that.
Yeah. A melody or a chordal thing. So I was just hearing, I was hearing, hate to see you cry. And then I was like, okay, where can I? So I had those chords, and I basically brought it to my co-producer, Murray, and we do a lot of co-writing together, and we basically got as far as the first verse, and then we kind of wrote the chorus. When you find me, you can keep me in the door. But we really didn't have the words. We just had the melody. We were actually very stuck on it. And that doesn't usually happen. We usually just commit to an idea. And we finish it. So I had that chorus thing and that first verse. So I brought it to two other friends of mine. This is the biggest co-write I've ever done. Technically, it was four of us. Okay. Usually, if I write with someone, it's maybe one or two. But these guys, the Jasons, I call them. Both their names are Jason. Jason Gant, he mixed my last record, How Long, and I've known him for a number of years, and he wanted to bring in his other friend, Jason Nick, so I brought them the song, sure enough, you know, when you find me, baby, you can keep me in the dark, when you find, all that stuff, and then Jason Nick, the other Jason, out of nowhere just goes, until I know your heart by heart, and I was like, holy, that's an interesting idea, so many songs about, oh, I will search heart by heart by heart until I find the one. But what this actually meant was just, you know, the theme of the song was very much telling a person, whether they're a friend or maybe like personal or intimate relationship, like, hey, I can see that you're struggling and maybe you don't fully trust me yet, but I don't want you to feel like you have to fully open up to me really until I understand you and I fully know your heart by heart, as in like memorizing it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it was a really interesting idea, and we just finished it. Mm. So that's not usually the process of songwriting for me. Usually I have an idea. There might be a lyric or a vocal attached to it, but it's generally a chordal or a melody thing, and then wrap it up, finish it.
So it is usually at the same time that you develop, I don't know, the chord progression plus the voice melody you are going to sing?
Yeah, I mean, there's always subject to change. Once I have a better, like, my brain is more wrapped around the melody and I don't have to think so hard about it, I can focus more on the chords. And it's like, hey, you know what? It might be really nice to throw a passing chord here. Oh, you know, you have 10 songs already with a 2 major to a 4 minor. Maybe do something different. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. Then I'll change it. But when it's in the writing's early stage, it's all good. Like, anything goes. Mm-hmm.
And when do you know that the song is done and it is ready to be recorded? Do you have a green light popping up in your mind and say, okay, now, Ariel, you need to stop and you need to go or move to the next song or you need to record it?
When anyone asks me about my songwriting process, I always say, just finish what you start. And it's such a better habit than having 10 unfinished songs than having 2 finished songs. And my process is, if I'm feeling it, like if I'm passionate about the arrangement, if I think it has potential, after I write the song and after I've done a voice memo into my phone, I will make a full demo. I'll record vocals, guitar, bass, I'll program drums, or if I can convince somebody to lay down some drums for me, I'll make a demo. And then that goes into a pile or a folder of songs. And I try not to listen to them too much, but I have to frequent them quite regularly to see if they still hold up. Mm-hmm. And then as I write more, I add more to it and more to it and more to it. And then, you know, once you have all the songs I want. So, for example, for this record, Headway, I wrote 20 songs. And I demoed basically all of them, or I had some kind of demo for all of them. Some better than others. And we ended up choosing 12 of the songs, recording 12 songs. So what that does when you have all these demos, it just also makes things a lot more efficient. So when I had my band, I said, hey guys, here's charts for the songs. Also, here's demos. Here's how I'm hearing them right now. And here's the approach you should take. So rather than starting from zero and never hearing it and not knowing the approach, here's a starting point. Maybe it'll change. Maybe it'll go here. Maybe it'll go there. Maybe we'll change the feel. Tempos often change. But here's the foundation and here's the vibe I'm hearing. And it really makes it a lot more of an efficient experience that way.
And how do you make the selection to go down from 20 to 10 or 12 songs? I don't remember on the album.
Yeah, Murray and I will go through it, and I know I value his opinion greatly. I'll ask him what his favorites are, what he thinks it's all about the strongest songs win. So the more songs you have, the better. My first record, I recorded 7 songs, and there were like 3 little instrumental interludes. I had 8 songs to choose from, so mm-hmm. I recorded 7 of the 8.
Okay.
This time I had 20, so it was like a lot. There was a lot more to choose from, and it made it in some ways more difficult, but in some ways it made it way more obvious which songs should have been the ones. And all the songs the eight songs that didn't make it, it's not that they were bad songs. Just in comparison to those, I don't think they held up. And in fact, some of them have fallen into the pile for the next record.
Okay.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like I like to throw any song idea away or waste it. I always want to maybe keep it in the running just in case there's a chance for it.
It seems that you are able to avoid in your slide guitar playing most of the guitar cliches on slide guitar, you know, the dust my broom stuff kind of riff and so on. So what's your take on slide guitar? How did you develop your own style?
Literally by just doing the opposite. I love all that stuff. Like the traditional, like Robert Johnson, you know, that kind of slide playing or like Dwayne Allman type mm-hmm. stuff. It's all great. But I didn't really listen to any of that stuff. That's not how I think of slide. I don't think of slide as a novelty that you put on and, oh, now I can do these specific licks only. I think there's so much more to it. Slide for me it started by me being a hired gun, a sideman guitarist, where I'd have to learn people's songs. And, oh, there's a slide part, so, okay, I guess I'm just gonna... Simple stuff, but I was like, I took an interest to it, and something felt natural about it. People would always say, hey, that sounds... I like how you did that slide part. Like, you should play that more on some other songs. I'm like, okay. And then I found some other... Like, I saw Derek Trucks, I remember, for the first time, and I was moved like anybody else's that sees him. It was such an experience. But I didn't have like that's what I need to sound. Mm. Like that is, no one will ever do that. That is such an amazing thing. I stumbled on some other guitar players, and don't get me wrong, I love like George Harrison as a slide player, Ry Cooder, Bonnie Raitt.
Yeah.
Lowell George is great. And there's some modern day guys too that had a heavy influence on me, but what got me out of, you know, standard slide playing was just using the slide to embellish what I was already playing rather than treating it like I was starting from square one, if that makes sense. So if I had this vocabulary already, I was just inserting the slide into that. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, I kind of just developed my own voice with it. And also, when I put the slide on, it almost simplifies. I feel like it kind of keeps me more contained. Sometimes without the slide, I'm just like, I catch myself. I'm like, oh, dude, you're all over the place. Whew, chill. Like we all do. We all kind of catch ourselves sometimes. With the slide, it really just reeled it back in. It was like, okay, maybe don't. Okay.
Don't say too much, yeah.
So stuff like that really played a big part into it. But just again, it was just embellishing what I was already playing, not necessarily using it as a novelty, not a novelty, but like a cliche type of item. And, you know, whatever everyone else is doing with it, I wanted to try to run the other way. This is how it's often played. Let me run this way and try looking at it from a different approach. Because we're all doing the same thing. We're all playing the same notes. We're all doing the same thing. How can I just do a U-turn here or a right turn and like find a different path?
Can you give us an example of maybe a classic way to play something in slide and something with more DNA from Ariel Posen?
Well, I see a lot of people with slide. First of all, they play in open tuning.
That's what I usually do, yes.
You know? That kind of stuff. Or...
Right.
Which is all great stuff. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. It's just not what spoke to me. It's not what inspired me, you know? I just come from listening to music that is so melodic, and I love melody. So, I mean, if I hear a line in my head, you know, I'd want to play. And it just lets you say the same thing differently. A lot of different, like there's it serves well for, you know, soft, clean, nice atmospheric playing, melodic, but also like soaring, step on every pedal you have, make it really loud, leads, you know, and but still it kind of keeps me a bit more restrained, so that's important.
And you switch easily or fluently to go from fretted note to the slide guitar playing, and even I think I saw you play behind the slide stuff.
Yeah. No? Again, it all comes down to what would I normally play? It's the same technique. If I would normally go, you know, like... It's just like doing that. I'm going... And the behind the slide, it's like... It's so similar to what I would already be playing. It just kind of ties notes together. You know?
And
I don't know. It's just fun.
And here at the moment, for example, you are in open tuning or some kind of weird tuning you are using,
no,
or top secret tuning?
definitely not a secret tuning. I'm in standard tuning. This guitar is just tuned down a fourth.
Okay, that's
so,
it.
So it's in B, but it's standard tuning. But I play 50% of the time in standard. So standard can be any key. It's just as long as it's, you know, in fourths with the third on the beast on the fifth string, mm-hmm. or the second string, depending which way you describe it. So I spend my time in that, and then I spend the 50% of the other time in open E tuning, but also that could be open D, open C, open C sharp, open D. It's all the same. It's 1-5-1-3-5-1. That's the
formula,
the intervals, yeah. In the tune. So a lot of people get caught up with the key, thinking, well, I can play in open D, but I can't play in open C, but it's just the same thing.
Mm.
It's just a matter of transposing and knowing where the keys are. So for me, I started on open E forever. I took an open E guitar to all my gigs, and I would just throw myself in the fire and try to figure out how to do it properly. And that's what really taught me how to use it, is by applying what I already knew. Again, the theme here is just using what you already know to your advantage. You know, I was like, okay, this is my major bar chord. Now it's this. Okay, this is my major seven. okay, now it's this. This is my flat seven. Now it's this. This is my minor six chord. Now it's this. It's just like little changes like that. And I did that with every scale I knew, every chord shape I knew. And in time, again, there was no secret trick or shortcut. It was just putting the time in.
Mm-hmm. And do you think the way that you are now able to switch from one tuning to another is because, or let me rephrase that, the fact that you play in one kind or in standard tuning to compare to open, does that help you to pick some ideas in standard tuning and put it in open and vice versa? Yeah,
kind of. Like at the end of the day, if I'm in open or standard, I'm thinking just the notes and music first. So I'm going for the same melodic idea. I'm going for the same chord tones, chord voicing. Just the way that you play it in either tuning comes out differently. So like I find standard tuning to be very guitar-like, you know. And open tuning, it's the same music side of it, but it's more piano-y to me. Specifically like chord shapes and having all these open strings to drone if you're playing chord voicings on the lower strings. It's more like piano voicings, which I love. So one is not better than the other, in my opinion. They are just two different voices.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to use, but I like to switch between because, yeah, it does inspire different ideas for writing, for creating. If I just stuck on one, I think I would get a little, not bored, but just, I'd fall into a lot more ruts. If I'm feeling uninspired in open tuning, yeah, I'll go back to standard. If I'm feeling a little worn out on standard, I'll go back to open. And it just kind of keeps the machine going for me.
Tell us about that strange strat-like guitar you are holding. It seems to be a bit weird.
Yeah, I've talked about this guitar a lot, so if anyone's watching that has seen it, I will make it quick so it's not boring. But this is made by a friend of mine in Saginaw, Michigan, Matt Ike, Mule Resonator Guitar. So this is a steel body.
Okay.
And these are his own pickups he makes. And yeah, he makes resonators. Like that's the main thing he makes. But he does these electric guitars. He was doing a Tele style version of that for a while. And I've always loved Strats. I've always been a big Strat guy. And for the longest time, I was trying to convince him, do a Strat-style Mulecaster, and eventually convinced him. So this is the second one. I have the first one. It's in another city at the moment. But this was the backup. I wanted just to get a backup, just in case, because I was touring a lot. You never know. And this one, I've just connected with it so much more. So it's kind of been the main one. But yeah, it's just a little different. I don't really notice a change tonally with the steel body anymore. I've never thought like I really need a steel bodied electric in my life. It just through the relationship and being friends with him, I just, you know, gave it a chance and wanted to play it, and I've used it so much it's just become a comfort zone guitar for me, and it's just fun and different. And that's it. It's tuned like a baritone, so standard scale length 25 scale length, like a Strat would be. And rather than having a longer scale length, having it shorter or like more standard still makes it sound like guitar, if that makes sense, rather than the longer scale length when that makes it sound like a bass, I find, on like baritone guitars. So.
And what about the electronics? So it is two pickups and volume tone, or you have a balance? I don't see it.
Yeah, exactly.
Volume tone. Okay.
Three-way pickup switch. These are his pickups. Yeah, really dynamic. That's volume wide open. I usually turn it down. Cleans up really nice.
It sounds like a single coil. Is that mini humbucker or kind of gold foil or something like that, or what?
Mini humbuckers. They're very low output though, so they're not throwing out too much heat, too much out, which I like because you get to control the dynamics a lot more that way.
Is that the guitar we hear on Headway a lot?
Yeah, that's a That is on there a lot, big time, big time, yeah.
Well, and what's the rest of the recipe to get the great guitar tones we hear on the record?
There was a collection of other guitars, my Jazzmaster, my Josh Williams Mockingbird. I used this Sur I have, this like a Strat style guitar, Collings Soco Deluxe guitar. I used this other guitar called a Case, made by my friend of mine in the UK. It's like a single cut Les Paul style guitar. Beautiful guitar. I used it all over the record as well. But a big part of the sound is this amp right here is this Turok.
Nice.
Just the Turok is a big part of my sound. Especially when I'm tuning low. I just need something with headroom that can kind of carry the weight but not compress too heavily. I don't like it to compress too soon. So that's the amp that's like, I think, on every song with the exception of one part on one song. Mm-hmm. I used another amp, but 99% of the record is that Turok amp.
And what about the gain we hear? Does it all come from the amp, or do you have some overdrive, compressor, or boost?
Yeah, no compression. Amp is always clean. I always play with an overdrive on, and I'm always using my, like I was showing you, the volume. This is wide open. If I turn it down, you can hear that it cleans up, but there's still a little bit of hair on it, which I really like. So I was using a combination of, you know, the Duelist. I think I was using a King of Tone. But on the record and for recording, this is not a commercial, but my signature pedal, the Broadcast AP made by Hudson, is like the most amazing recording pedal for me. For what I do, it's kind of gives you that sound of like an amp breaking up, so to speak, but with headroom. So I can run the loud Turok, push that on, hit it with the Broadcast, and it's crispy and it's like warm and breaking up, but it's not compressing. And that's a big sound on the record for sure.
I watched a couple of live recording of you people can find on the internet, and you have always, at least on the videos I watched, a great sound. So do you have the same kind of rig on stage like what you have in studio? Yeah,
pretty much, yeah. I don't like to play a show without a Turok amp, so I mean, I'm fortunate that the guys there are like, they're like family and they're great guys. So like, whenever I'm traveling, most of the time I'm flying somewhere or maybe I'm driving somewhere. If I'm driving somewhere, yeah, I can take my own amp, but when I'm flying I need to use an amp or borrow one or rent one somewhere else, and sometimes it's not as easy to find one. So they're always there to make sure I can have an amp, because that's a huge, it's like an integral part of my sound. So that's huge. But yeah, I pedal wise it's all the same stuff. I mean, I always will have an overdrive on. I'll always have the Broadcast. I'll always have a fuzz. I'll always have like a kind of an octave Cobb style fuzz. Reverb, slap, trem.
And what about the sound? Do you have some specific recipe to get your sound to be recorded, or is that the job of the sound engineer?
Yeah, I'm not too worried about that. If I can get a good sound raw, then it'll sound great after. If it can sound good right out the gate without any fancy stuff, then there's no reason it shouldn't sound amazing after with all the other stuff. So I leave that to the pros.
Okay. Excellent. It is 2021 is still at the beginning of February when we are recording this, so the year is quite young. So what can I wish you for this year? Any specific project you want to push forward?
Well, I mean, the big focus right now is Headway, which is coming out March 5th. I don't know when this is coming out, but that's been the big focus and will remain the focus. That being said, I have a lot of other stuff in the can that I can't wait to release, music and other type of content.
Nice.
That I'm really excited about. It's, like I said, once I got inspired and started working on stuff, I kind of hit the ground running, so there's a lot coming.
All right.
So 2021, I think there's going to be a lot more music still to come.
Excellent. Where people can reach you and follow all your news, and when you are, when you will be able to go back on the road, what's the best website, or I don't know, social media to reach you out?
Yeah, arielposen.com or at arielposen on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. Come follow me.
All right.
That, those are all the base places, yeah.
Do you mind playing a couple of your gorgeous notes to take us out?
Sure thing. Thanks for having me, man.
My pleasure. Beautiful. Again, thank you very much for your time, Ariel, and I sure hope that next time we'll meet, it will be face-to-face. Maybe you will be able to come to Paris and we'll do another Guitar in Hand interview here at the showroom, or I will catch you, I don't know, at the Winterham 2022 or wherever you are playing, okay?
Sounds great, man. I look forward to it.
All right. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Pour le prix d'un magazine, abonnez-vous à la chaîne Guitare pour accéder aux vidéos intégrales. For the price of a magazine, subscribe to The Guitar Channel to access the full videos.